No, it's really, really interesting stuff. Like, wow, I mean, that's the first time I've on a red carpet. It's great.
That's fucking brilliant. You've been to more premieres than I have at this point, which is upsetting to hear.
Only as a security guard, though. Only as a security guard.
That would have been amazing. Hello, and welcome to Carry On Swearing. I'm your host, Jake Parker, and today I've got an old friend of mine. Haven't seen him for about, I would say 15 years, roughly. 15, 16 years. I'm going to let him introduce himself, what he does, and then we'll get into the podcast.
Hi, my name's John Cannon. I'm a singer-songwriter from Cheltenham. Jake would know me as John Gore because we're very, very old school friends.
It's very, very true. Right, so, buddy, let's start off with what actually you do. Tell us, everyone, what you do.
Yeah, well, so I'm a singer-songwriter, music producer, George Michael tribute. Yeah, bit of all sorts of music terms.
Nice one, man. So everyone always asks the same question. Did you go to university? Did you study music? Was it a natural talent for you? What actually happened?
Well, this is the thing. Apart from the last 2 years at school, secondary school, I had no interest in music whatsoever. No studying. I literally taught myself, taught by listening to other singers, my heroes, and took it from there.
Nice one. Okay. So why George Michael's, may I ask? Why was that a thing?
I don't know. I blame my father for that because he was a massive 80s fan, big George Michael fan. And he used to come home from the pub every Friday night, you know, get pissed. And he'd play the same records over and over again. And I'd imagine I just grew up on that. And George Michael, for me, is just the greatest thing I've ever heard. And I wanted to sing his songs. And I sang his songs in a karaoke night one night when I was about 13, 14. And the DJ called my father over and he says, you want to take this kid somewhere because he's got some, you know, potential. You've got a great tone. And the rest is history, really.
Nice one. And what's it like performing live? Do you ever get nervous? What's your technique? Do you get a bit of tea in you, get a bit of water, cleanse the old palate before you start getting the bars out? What do you do?
Yeah, well, so first of all, do vocal warmth. So I've got a very good vocal trainer called Rob. He's absolutely amazing. And before any gig I do, I mean, 10 minutes before the show starts, I'm the most nervous guy in the room. I get palpitations, yeah. I get flustered, hot sweats. But as soon as I walk on and the crowd are there and they're all clapping, cheering, and as soon as I sing the first song or the first line, I just settle in and I'm a different person completely.
Yeah, that's good, man. That's good. So you said that when you were growing up, obviously George Michael was an inspiration from your father. But what kind of, what other artists are your inspiration?
Well, I was a big fan of George. I'm a big fan of the 80s in general, really. So all the electronic pop, like Pet Shop Boys, you know, Simply Red, Mick Ucknall. What a singer. What an absolute diamond. Prince was a big influence, because obviously from the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, up until his death. So yeah, I'd say Michael Jackson as well, he's got to be up there. I mean, everybody likes a bit of Jackson. I mean, that guy was so influential, very influential.
I'm a big inspiration from the Beatles and Elvis. They're my kind of my genre of music. I love a bit of Elvis. I honestly, the Beatles are probably the best band I've ever heard. I'm going to be honest with you, mate. I'm not a big fan of George. I'm going to tell you, I'm not a big fan of George. I don't want to upset you.
I know. I think I'll have to educate you a little bit then, with a bit of George.
So, where have you actually played? Obviously, you play in local bars in our town of Cheltenham, but where else do you do? Yeah. Where have you toured? Have you been doing some big tours around the UK? What do you do?
Yeah, well, we've been before COVID, we was doing really well. We was doing London. We were doing Manchester, Bristol, Birmingham, all the major cities. Obviously, COVID, it took 2.5 years really out of my career. I had to literally start again.
Yeah.
You know, I was writing good songs during COVID, but obviously, you know, you can't play live, so there's no point in really putting songs out there if you haven't got the audience. I'd tend to release my songs during a show where the audience can, you know, stream it there or follow me there. But, you know, and after COVID, we just started again, but it's gone really, really slowly. So right now, in this position at the minute, we're just rebuilding, basically.
Yeah, starting from scratch, if you would.
Yeah, because it really, really took it out of me, really, COVID. We was really getting a good run together.
And how do you book your gigs? Like, do they search for you? Do you search for them? How do you get them?
Well, I got a couple of agents who I work for. Saying that, they work for me, don't they, really? Because I'm working for them. for me personally, you know, from a friend of a friend or... you know, whatever. And but mostly agents.
What's the biggest venue you've ever played at?
Biggest venue? That's an interesting one, that is. We played, there's a place in London, real old school in Islington, called the Macbeth. And from the outside, it looks like a proper old gangster's pub. Quite overwhelming, really. But inside, it had a massive stage. huge stage, and I didn't know it was probably one of the best music places in London, especially like 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, we packed that out. I couldn't believe it. It was a great night, that was. I know everybody was getting pissed. I was fucking hammered.
You got to do it.
Yeah, man. I don't tend to drink much during my shows, but that night I was just buzzing.
What's your kind of drink that you go to during your performance? Like, for example, I know some people that drink a good old lager before they go up and sing. Well, afterwards, people stop buying them shots. What do you do?
Yeah, well, I'm more of a short man, you see. I like top shelf, so anything vodka-based, gin-based, whiskey-based, anything like that. Yeah, man. I don't want to be walking around stage with a pint of beer. I always have a short, you know.
Here's a question for you. If I could tell you you can play at any venue in the world, what venue would you want to play at?
I don't know. That's interesting, because you've got the historic ones like the Cavern in Liverpool. You know, the Beatles, where the Beatles played. I mean, I think that's everyone's musician's first, you know, dream, I suppose. But probably Earl's Court, but that's not there anymore in London. That was a massive arena. Wembley, yes. Yeah, let's go Wembley. I love the sell at Wembley. Cool, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
And if you could open up for any act, who would it be?
Currently, right now. I kind of like Harry Styles. I do like Harry Styles. I'm a bit of a fanboy for Harry. I do like, or Charlie Puth. I like Charlie Puth as well.
Yeah, Charlie, good. Yeah, yeah.
He makes my kind of music anyway, like, you know, electronic, pop. Yeah. So that's, we got a lot in common, really.
Yeah. Have you tried to collaborate with anyone? Has that ever been a situation you've been able to collaborate with another artist or another star?
Well, I suppose this is like many cases with all different acts, especially in my position. We send loads of emails out to everybody, producers, artists, record labels. But it all just goes into the trash, I suppose, all the spam. You can, can't get to know anybody, apart from networking, unless it's local artists. But if you want to get out there, it's so difficult at the minute because nobody seems to want to know me or anybody else. I suppose the same with you in your job, you know?
It's very similar to my job, mate. Yeah, it's like you can send an email, someone could offer me a locations marshal job or manager job. And it goes straight into the spam. Yeah. They get emails continuously, all the time they get emails, so I'm always on the back burner.
Well, my dad, bless him, every day, even today, and yesterday, the day before, he's trying to get hold of BBC Radio 1, because they play like a new artist like once a week or something like that, because he always listens to radio, and he's been trying to call every radio station, but still get no response. Nobody would take a chance. I don't think, they play the same songs over and over again. I understand that, because probably the record labels, finance that. Just that's how you get big, I suppose, and get number one. But when all the new guys are going to get a chance to get seen, get heard, that's my frustration.
I get you, man. I do get you. So how did you discover your music? Apart from old George and Dad, how did the music come to you?
Quite naturally, yeah. So because during the old days in school, I had no interest in music at all. But I obviously got doing the karaoke stuff, the George stuff. I figured, I'm going to try writing some songs. And I managed to write a song on an old, like a real cheap keyboard from Argos. I think my little niece got it now. I gave it my niece. It's like the old presets, so you give her like these real shitty beats. I started writing little jazz songs on there, and we managed to take it to a studio, and they transformed into a lovely little song called The Best Thing. That's my first, I think that was my first song I released as a 16, 17 year old. Real cute little song, actually. It was cringy looking it back at it now, especially the video. And there's a song called 17. It was another nice little song, but the video, I don't know what I was doing. I look like a real camp. Oh, I just look awful. Yeah, it's like Sam Smith, really.
Oh, fair play. So where does your inspiration for your music come from, though? What I was saying is the lyrics. Does your dad, does he inspire your music? Where does it all come from?
Well, I try to write all my songs about my life. Mostly, if you listen back to a few of my songs, you think, fuck, he must be depressed. Well, some of them are doom and gloom. There's a song I've written called Crowded Spaces. It's still my favourite song of mine. But that was written during COVID. And that was, it's about me. It's about everybody else. I'm a kind of guy that feeds off emotion. So if I'm with a group of friends, and then, I feed off that emotion if they're feeling down. I feel down. If they're feeling up, it's great, I feel up. Most of my songs are about even myself or people I know.
Yeah, okay. Are you going to give us a little sample of that song? Are you going to sing for us?
Well, Crowded Spaces. So, I'll give you a verse. I ain't got my piano with me. Oh. So it goes like, a cold blue light that flickers away. I forgot the lyrics. Oh my God, I forgot the lyrics. Oh my word. And this is the funny thing, right? I do this on stage all the time. I'll be singing a song, grating in it. Oh, forget the lyric. Oh no, what am I going to do? Luckily, the crowd's there to finish the lyrics. Oh man, I do this every time. See, that's another thing about me. I don't know what's going on with that. Do any other artists do that?
What one of your newest songs? Do you remember any of your newest songs?
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, good idea. My new single. Well, I say new. So it goes like, because I have died and gone to heaven, and I like what I see in your eyes. We have time, to be together, for I like what I feel with you tonight. That's the hook. I mean, actually, the interesting song, the thing about that song, I wrote that here in my studio, and we took it to Steve Winwood's studio, just outside Cheltenham. And Steve Winwood's a massive icon of the 80s and 70s. I think he's in a few bands as well. And when I was there, we had The Who rehearsing in the next room. We had a tour coming up. And Pete Townsend had his acoustic guitar, and we used that on the track. And there's a picture of me holding the guitar, or trying to play it badly, online somewhere. I'll try and find it. That was fun. that was really nerve-wracking, though, that. Really nerve-wracking. Yeah, that's my first time around serious musicians. But I settled in.
Does anyone recognise you? Like, you walk around the street and go, oh, I've listened to your song recently. That's a banger.
Yeah. That's happened recently. I was sat in the... Of course, sat in the pub as usual. I was sat in Yates's, and this fellow comes up. Oh, John, yeah. I like what you do, mate. Can I have a photo? I said, yeah, of course you can. We had a photo, and my mate sat there saying, who's that? So I don't know, just I'll get this randomly, mate. But yeah, it's nice. It is nice. I need more of that. But I know most of these famous guys get sick of it, don't they? But I haven't had enough of it, so I need it.
Have you heard any other episodes? We've got a couple of singers on there. Have you heard any of them? Would you like to collaborate with those people?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm always up for collaborating with any artist, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm in a position where I want to have a chance doing what I love, and why not give them the chance as well? If they can help me, I can help them, you know?
So it's about building and networking. Have you ever struggled with any, like, proper difficulties whilst doing what you're doing? Is there, like, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm just going to give up this is not working, or, oh, someone doesn't like that, that's completely just insulting my song. How do you deal with rejection like that, or insults?
Truthfully, it's quite recent, to be honest, the last month or so, going through a lot of shit, you know, with the family and everything, a couple of bereavements in two months ago. We had a bereavement, and I just lost a plug. Like, even now, I've got a bit of writer's block, so to me, it's like, I thought, oh, my career's over, I can't be bothered with this no more, until you messaged me, said, do you want to come on the podcast? So you sort of, like, re-energised myself here, so you know, I thank you for that. But yeah, rejection... I take it on the chin these days. I mean, a couple of years ago, it would have hurt me, I suppose. But now I take it on the chin. You can't please everybody, can you?
No, you cannot. No. Social media wise, are you trying TikTok? Are you trying the YouTube? Obviously, you're on YouTube, but are you trying TikTok and other social medias, trying to get yourself out there more?
Yeah, I'm trying. Well, I recently got TikTok. I'm not really sure how to work it, to be honest with you. I'm not really. No, you see, this is crazy, because me being a singer, I love being in front of a crowd. But I hate being in front of a camera. Now, if you went for my photos, you'd be like, nah, you're not. I really am. Most of the time, I don't want to be there, you know? So I've got to get used to TikTok. I've got to get used to it.
Yeah. So you said that you didn't really discover music until 2 years after, near the end of school. Like, what started that? Well, apart from you singing in a pub at the age of 13 at George Michael's and someone discovering you, what kind of gave you that trigger?
Well, I've got to go right back then to the first time I actually sang in a karaoke setting. Everyone was doing it. My cousin was singing Oasis. I mean, he literally destroyed Wonderwall. I mean, it was horrific. He was absolutely horrific. And he won't mind me for saying that, but he, oh my God. So I thought I could do better than that. So I got up and done, I think it was Sting's Roxanne, but a George Michael version. It's like a jazz version. And I sang it really, really well. I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh, I like this. But the high notes I found quite easy. I thought, I mean, Jesus Christ. From that, I thought, I wonder if I could make a living out of this guy. I've heard other tribute acts. Some of them are really good, some are really bad. I think, oh, I can't be that bad. So I started training myself, looking at YouTube tutorials, and I'd sing, I'd just be in pitch, you know. And we worked from there. Literally, there's been so many little steps building up to now. And right now, I mean, my voice is a bit poor today. I mean, I'm suffering a bit of a cough, got a bit of a cold. I had vocal training this morning. I was really struggling. But yeah, no, really interest wise, I'm not one of these natural or gifted artists. So I could pick up a guitar and this is easy.
Yeah.
Can't do that. I've had to really, really knuckle down and train myself by listening to other artists, how they pronounce certain words, you know. But yeah, I think I'm doing okay.
Would you say the training's been quite hard though? Would you say it's been quite difficult, like trying to train your voice to match a certain pitch and?
Yeah. Because every day is different. And every show is different. I mean, you can't be brilliant every night. I mean, you try, but it's harder for a solo artist because I haven't got backing singers to back me up. You know, I've got to do all that myself.
Yeah.
You know, so there's never a reason why I want to collaborate with as many people as I can. Network. Cool. You got a network, you know?
Yeah, I got you. If you could record at any recording studio, what would it be? Now, everyone says Abbey Road. Can you think of one that's not Abbey Road?
You just took the words out of my mouth there. I mean, come on, Abbey Road, that's probably the greatest recording studio of all time, isn't it? I mean, that's like the Mecca of music. that's the Jerusalem of music, that is. I don't really know any more famous studios. We're not like Abbey Road, anyway. I mean, my studio is pretty cool.
Is that your own bedroom? Is that your own? Is that your own studio? Your own bedroom? What is it?
This one here? No, it's my own studio. Yeah, this is built in my back garden.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, this took years of saving up. I'm glad I got it though. It's my own little space. There's nothing better than closing the door behind you.
Yeah.
And you treat it like a proper job. You know, all my early stuff was from my bedroom. Even though they sound all right for a bedroom artist, but this is beautiful, man. Honestly, you know, come down when you can. Morning work.
Yeah, we'll pop down, man. That looks really nice. It looks very cool. It actually looked like a proper studio that you would have in the centre of Cheltenham. I was like, yeah, where is he? He must be in the centre of Cheltenham somewhere. But, you know, fair play. Yeah. Looks nice, man. Don't forget your roots, buddy. That's what I always say. Don't forget where you come from.
That's it, mate. I've always said, one of my main targets, one of the main reasons why I do this, is not even for myself, it's for my family, really. I'd love to buy this house and keep it in the family.
Yeah.
You know, and give my family a better life, because they never had any really success in our family. Not, you know, going back 100 years, no one's really made it any success. My uncle had a great chance to make it, you know, in the football world, but he a bit of an alcoholic back in his day. He'd rather have the drink than play football, you know. So that's his problem. But I'd love to have an opportunity so I can really help my family out. That's what I want to do.
And I guess that's what your passion, I guess your music is where it comes from, is helping the family out, and of course they inspire you and you keep going. You write songs about your current mood and, you know, what makes you go, you know, it's amazing.
I mean, that's it. Yeah, no, they're my main influence. My family and my partner, my main influence, yeah, for sure. I mean, they really, it's like a kick up the arse, you know, they just keep me going.
So apart from music, is music your only career? Are you doing anything else to try and get the money in the house?
Well, I used to do a bit of security now and then. Done some great places. I used to work like film premieres in London. I met a few people. I met Will Smith, real nice guy actually. Dynamo. Remember Alex Zane off Balls of Steel?
Yeah.
I met him once. He was practicing his little speech. He was like, I think he was presenting the show actually.
Yeah.
That was really good, but it was long hours. Really long hours. We had to keep traveling to London because we traveled to London 4 nights a week and we never stayed over. So you have to keep coming back to Cheltenham. But it's really, really interesting stuff. Like, wow, I mean, that's the first time I've on a red carpet. It's great.
That's fucking brilliant. You've been to more premieres than I have at this point, which is upsetting to hear.
Only as a security guard.
That would have been amazing. Here's a question for you. What would you tell your younger self that you've now learnt? From way, way back in school, what would you tell yourself?
Well, I say, you know, start now. You know, don't wait as long as you should have done. You know, I've waited. Like I said, I didn't start till 2 years after school. I would have started way earlier than that. So you give yourself a bit more of a chance. Don't care. Don't take any notice what people think of you. If you've got a goal and you know and you're good at it, you keep on doing it. You know, forget all the noise. Just carry on and just be you.
That's a nice one. I like that, man. Nice little motivation there. As I just mentioned to you before, before we started, it's a swearing podcast. And I said, you don't have to swear if you don't want to. But obviously, I'm going to ask a couple of questions about it. So, whilst you're on tour, when you're doing your gigs and pubs, and obviously pubs are the main cause of swearing, what's one of the biggest things you've heard? Like, I've heard on sets big words like fuck and cunt and all the big ones, but what have you kind of heard and what you weren't expecting? Like, is there an artist before you and they went, oh shit, that went wrong? Like, what the fuck are you saying? What kind of atmosphere do you have?
Well, I've been in that position myself. I'm the laugh on stage. I forgot the lyrics earlier. I'd be saying, oh, fuck's sake, I forgot the lyric. And then people would just laugh at me. But I do it on the mic, you know, I let everybody know about it. Yeah. I mean, I've been called a few names as well. Well, if I'm doing a George Michael show, you get some pisshead at the back saying, "You know any Elvis?" I was like, "Fucking hell, man! Yeah. Look outside, it's a George Michael tribute." Oh, but yeah, no, I've heard some things. Yeah, I mean, I've seen an argument before after behind stage at a gay pride event. I was in Gloucester, yeah, a bit of a scuffle. Oh, I'm napping in my fucking time. You're on for like 15 minutes. 15 minutes is more than enough to get four of your best songs in, you know? Don't be picky. That's the other thing as an artist. Never be picky. Because, you know, don't tread on people's toes when you're trying to get up the ladder. Because when you come down the ladder, you might need those people.
You know? Exactly. Don't burn bridges and don't bite the hand that feeds you. Completely agree with you.
No, it's true, mate. Absolutely. Yeah, spot on.
So what is your favourite swear word? Do you have a favourite swear word?
I do like cunt quite a lot. Yeah, that's a nice one. Right? Yeah, because it's straight to the point, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, especially in London, man. Oh, that's their favourite word, I think. You fucking can't.
I agree, but still.
I know a lot of people take offence by it, and I understand it.
It's come more of a modern swear word in the last 10 years than what it used to be. No one used to say it. Now everyone says it. It's great. I love it.
Well, I said, say, oh, you say, see you next Tuesday. What's the point in that? You know, what's the point of me calling you? What's the point of me saying to you, I'll see you next Tuesday? Well, I'm still calling you a cunt. It's pointless.
During your gigs, what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen? Like, is there something that... I had a guest on who was busking in London, and they said that they saw someone get their dick out. Randomly, in London, busking, what's the weirdest thing you've seen?
I've seen some weird things, man. I've played in some strange bars. I've obviously been a George Michael act. I do quite a lot of gay bars. And some of these drag queens, oh my god! Obviously they're blokes, right? And so they're wearing these, obviously wearing these knickers. But you can't see any bulge. So where is it? What are they doing with it? Where is it? Oh man, honestly, oh my god! I always ask, where the fuck is it? I mean, there's nothing there. They generally look like women. So where is it?
Yeah.
Oh man, but they are funny people though. God, they're funny.
I can imagine they are. I've never actually been to a drag queen bar or a gay bar. I think I went to a gay club once, and I'll tell you what, they're absolutely hilarious. There's people in there. Oh, they're brilliant. I love them. I love them, love them, love them.
Yeah, man. We played some great gay bars. Manchester and Canal Street, Bar Pop, we played that one. That was quite fun. We played Seamus O'Donnell's in Bristol. That was quite fun.
Yeah.
But they're all good fun, you know. At the end of the day, musically, they're probably the best places to play because everyone's excited, don't they? They just want to party, you know. So,
do you ever get excited when you realise you've got a sellout gig? For example, I guess when you put your tickets online, you tell them where you're going, you did a little advert on Facebook. What's that feel like when you've got so many people turn up and go, "Ah, it's John. I know him. Go on, mate, sing a song."
Yeah. Well, actually, when selling tickets, I already get nervous. You think, oh my god, if I don't sell enough here, this is really embarrassing. And people will think, oh look, you can't fucking sell out a place. But the same, when they do sell it, because we do pull in a lot of crowd now. And especially our Cheltenham shows, we do like a Christmas show every year with friends of friends, you know, loyal supporters and stuff like that, family. And that's really exciting because I know those people who's turning up knows every word to my songs. So it makes it a little bit easier when you sing. I've done, you know, when I first started, I was doing gigs, singing songs, and nobody heard the songs. It's like, and you're playing to deaf ears, and no applause at the end. There's nothing more disheartening than that, you know. But I say that to all any up and coming artist, you know, who's just starting out. Don't let that get you, because they are listening. Some people just don't engage. You know, that's just them as people, but they are listening.
Yeah.
You know, just treat it if it's like a small gig, just treat it like a live rehearsal. You know, because somebody there might be five people there, but there's one person there who might take really interest in you, you know?
So
you never know who you're singing to, do you?
That's it. And the main purpose of the podcast is to inspire. Obviously, your story is very different to another guest I've had on and another guest I've had on. And of course, you know, I always track your story and I find it very, you know, very inspiring where we started, obviously, back in primary school.
Yeah, we both started with the same thing, didn't we, really? You know, we both come from nothing, you know, we're building our way up. You know, we all need a little help on the way, that's all, you know.
That's it, man. Yeah, help does help. Oh, help does help, absolutely. But obviously, what my point is that I think it's nice if someone hears your story and goes, ah, wow, that person started with nothing, no money, nothing. They just started with a guitar or a piano in the bedroom. And now look at him. He's now doing some tours in Cheltenham, getting the Christmas gig going. People are sitting there cheering his songs, singing his songs on. And it's very inspirational.
Yeah, man. I'd say I just love it. What, you know, this to me is the best job in the world, because Not many people can go to their job and think, fucking hell, this is great, you know. A lot of people hate work, you know. I understand it. We don't want to get up at fucking 5 o'clock every morning, do you? Working your bollocks off for nothing and get taxed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Carr said, you know, I remember I quite like comedy as well, and Jimmy Carr, I find him so funny. He was saying somebody said about tax invasion to him. He said, well, that's why I do two gigs, you know, one for me, one for them. I just think that is quality. That is quality. I might use the same thing for my gigs.
That is hilarious. If you weren't, actually, that's a good question. If you weren't into music, what would you have done? Would you have gone into comedy? Would you have done something else?
I don't know. Actually, I mean, I love comedy. Like Only Fools and Horses. Oh my God, I think that show was written about my family, I'm telling you. we got 5 or 6 triggers in our family. You know what I mean? We got a couple of dull boys, a couple of voices. He won't give you fuck all. But what would I be doing? I don't know, because I always had, like, if you remember back in the day, I used to love snooker and pool. And I still do. And I still play. I still play at county level, quite a good level. I still do that as like an hobby. You know, just like me, get away from music for a bit if I need a break. Happy days. Play comps, win a bit of money if I can. Professionally, what would I be doing? That's a great question. Yeah, probably be playing football. I remember our Leavers Assembly. Thing was back in end days was be a professional snooker player.
Oh, I remember those days, mate, standing in front of everyone saying, what do you want to be? I think I said I want to be an actor. Obviously that went out the window and it became film and TV, but
yeah, well, at least you're in the same kind of genre though, aren't you? At least you were around it, you know. I'm miles away from a snooker player. I'm on stage doing music. Pretending to sing. Pretending to be good.
Your career is now music, as we've just stated for this whole podcast. What would you tell someone? Like you just said, what would you tell your younger self? But what would you tell someone that wants, who's just left university or left school and goes, I really want to get into music. What would they do? How did they do it?
Just don't do what I did. Study it. Study as much as you can. Network as much as you can. Leave your hometown for a while. Get down in places like London. You have to network with people. You can't do it on your own, you know? And I've suffered to realise that. You can't do it on your own. You really need help from people, you know, inspirational, you know, travel, get these inspirations, meet people, meet new people. But most importantly, get the gigs, no matter what the cost is, no matter about payment, get out there and get your name out there. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
Don't let money influence you. You know, yeah, it's great to have money, but music's from the heart, from your soul. And you know, money don't come into that. I mean, you'll get the money. If you're good enough, you'll get the money. Just do what you love doing. And don't let anybody stop you. Just carry on. Just keep going, and keep going. You'll be knocked down 100 times, but make sure you get up. You know? I feel like Rocky, yeah? They are your inspirational quotes.
That's good, man. You look like Rocky Balboa as well. Don't worry about just saying it.
Like a bob.
Some people say that you need to start off with doing free gigs. Like, same with film and TV. Some people say that you need to start off being not a freelancer, but kind of start off with work experience and etc. Like, that's how you get in and network. Do you agree?
Well, kind of. I suppose it all fits in the same thing. Like, I remember Ed Sheeran saying with like the 10,000 gig rule, isn't it? You go around 10,000, do 10,000 gigs a year. You know, like open mic nights, you know, it's free. Just turn up, plug and play, you know. Obviously, you don't get paid for it, but you're getting your name out there and you're getting experience. That's the main thing in anything, is the experience. Get the experience. If you got confidence in yourself, you could do anything. You could take over the world. You know, confidence is key. But you have to put everything into it. There's no point, oh, I'll do this today. Oh, no, I'll leave that now. I'll do that next. No, you do it. Just do it. Don't let yourself down. You'll be absolutely fine.
Do venues pay quite well, like, for an upcoming artist like yourself? Do they pay a good, decent amount of money? Can you live on that money, or do you kind of still got to do your own kind of job and get yourself out there a bit more?
Before COVID, I could live on it. Yeah, before COVID, it was great. I was getting good money, well paid for gigs. Yeah, I mean, music was great. You know, I was getting little things here, little things there. But after that, I think venues really couldn't afford to pay the same money. I understand that, you know. Everybody's struggling. But it's like a lot of people, like bands, that's why bands are struggling. You know, if I'm getting a wage as a solo act, a band would be getting the same amount of money, but they'd have to split that between 4 or 5 people.
Yeah.
So how can you live with that? So then you've got to get a job. And that's more disheartening. You think, oh, fuck, man, I've got to go on the bins tomorrow, you know. And which I've done. You know, I still do now and then. You know, when I 3 days a week, I've, you know, I'm really, really, I'm proper council estate, me. I do the bins on the Thursday, gigs on the Friday. You know, it's great.
And when venues book you, do you have to pay a fee? Do you have to rent out the venue, or do they kind of be like, here's free, just whatever you make, we take a certain percentage of? How does it work business-wise?
Yeah, well, yeah, see, now we do kind of a mix sometimes. So if we're booked, then obviously they pay for the venue. You know, they just pay me a wage. Yeah. But if I'm doing private shows, then yeah, we have to hire a venue. I say like 200 quid, 250 quid, whatever the size is. And you can only do that when you know you can sell these places out, otherwise you're losing money, aren't you? So we do all right. We do all right on that aspect, because we know we can sell tickets. But yeah, but obviously venues these days, obviously everything's going up, isn't it? Everything goes up, yeah. apart from our wages, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I completely understand, man. And you say that you're now selling out tickets. That's great. And what is your next gig? Have you got anything planned?
Well, not privately. We're just doing stuff what we're booked from. Like, we've got a show this coming up in Blackpool. It's like a party venue. It's a great venue. We was up there just going out for a couple of nights. A couple of weeks ago, and yeah, it's great, mate. Oh man, it's so cheap up there. I mean, yeah, it's rough, but you know, we're rough, aren't we? Come on, we're rough and ready. Yeah. And the rougher the place, the better. That's where real people are, and they're so cheap that you get pissed. You can get pissed on 50 quid. You know, it's great. I mean, but you're guaranteed a great night, and you got some real good acts up north. So, and it's another thing, networking again. You know, I met some real great people up there, Blackpool. And after you get, if you get the Blackpool key, you got the whole strip, haven't you? It's like in Benidorm in Spain, you know. You get the whole strip.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't go Benidorm because I've heard the money's real bad. Anybody listening who wants to give me a few, you know, I'll be interested.
After every gig, does anyone ever come up to you and say, wow, that was amazing, well done, or, oh, you know, you said about pictures, you know, like, what's the best thing you've heard from someone?
I've had people go to my dad saying, I've been there, and say, oh my God, his voice is absolutely amazing. Can I have a CD? Because we always take CDs with us. Yeah, take this, take that.
Yeah.
I've signed autographs. Some guy said, George Michael, doing the George Michael show, somebody said, I've been to 2 George Michael concerts in my life. I tell you what, you're better. I said, yeah. I didn't say anything back. I said, thank you. I thought, yeah, you've got to be smoking some serious pot. No one's better than the real thing, I'll tell you that. But I can't believe you don't like George Michael.
To be fair, I probably have heard him. It's just like, if you told me to, if you named songs,
that's why. Because there you go.
If you named a song, I might be like, oh yeah, okay, that's him. But I can't name a song off the top of my head, of George Michael's that everyone would know. Sorry, I can't.
Like Wham. What about Wham? You must know Wham. That's George Michael. He wrote the songs. He sung the songs. It still counts.
All right, I'll back off then.
Fair enough. You're a Wham fan.
Do you prefer your own music, or do you prefer doing a George Michael's tribute act? Which one do you prefer doing more?
I say it's more fun doing the George Michael stuff, because the George Michael fans are really exciting and they know the songs. Doing my own stuff is obviously great, because when I hear people singing my own lyrics back at me, that's the best feeling in the world. But obviously when you're singing your own songs and nobody knows them, it's like, oh shit, you know. But I do, in the George Michael shows, I put 2 or 3 of my own songs in. They tend to oh my God, he writes his own music. That's amazing. Where can you find your music? Spotify, you know, all the crap, the streaming sites, which I hate the streaming site because you don't get paid enough. But you think, right, see, if you had like 250,000 streams, imagine that was sales, right, in a shop like years ago.
Yeah.
You'd be a multi-millionaire. That's wrong. It's terrible. And I think Prince warned us about this. He warned us about this. Obviously, George Michael took took Sony to court, didn't he, back in the 90s? And obviously, he lost. But at the end of the day, it's the same outcome. He wanted out of the contract. He lost the court case, but they released him. So, what's the point of all that? You know? But, modern music. I'll tell you something interesting. One of the first producers I worked with, Ditton, he passed away, unfortunately. But he said to my dad, if he'd have been running in the 80s, he'd have made it by now. He'd have made it by now.
Yeah.
I think, well, is that a compliment or do I sound dated? I don't know what it is. I suppose it's my music taste, I suppose. I like dance music. I love dance music.
Yeah, dance music is great. I do love a bit. I love Clubland. I don't know what it is, but Clubland always comes back to me.
90s Clubland. Yeah, you can't beat that.
So who is actually a part of your team? Who do you have behind you that supports you and helps you financially? And like you said, you're a producer, but who else is a part of your team?
So the most important person in the music, in my music life, would be my dad. He's like, you know, he's been there from day one. He's funded me. He's pushed me out there as much as he can. Like I said earlier, even every day he's on calls to radio stations. You know, can you play him? Can you play this? Can you play that? And I've got a manager. My dad wants to be a manager, so it's like I've got 2 managers now. My dad, Jason Darcy, an agent called Maraid. I've got a couple more agents, different place, yeah. Like they don't go by a name, they go by like a company name. But I forget that, yeah. It's weird names like XL and what's the other one? Quinn. Yeah, yeah. Quinn, something like that. I don't know. As long as they get me book, as long as they get me bookings, I don't really care. And obviously me and then Charlie Baxter. He does all my remixes. He the most talented kid I've ever met in my life. Oh my god, he's like a Calvin Harris. Or, you know, or David Guetta. But I can't believe he hasn't made it yet. I mean, he should be out there. Some of his stuff is amazing, honestly. Yeah. He makes my stuff 10 times better. You know, I might make a demo, I'll hand it to him and just like lift it up. He's like the Quincy Jones with Michael Jackson. Honestly, I get annoyed that he hasn't made it. You know, I think this guy is so talented. Come on, man. You know, give him a chance. So, you know, I should be saying about myself. Give me a chance. But he's such a good lad. Like, he's so fun. Honestly, you want to get him on your show, mate. He's a really interesting kid.
I'll text him. I'll find out where he is. So if everyone has a dream of their music being on a game, on a film or a TV show, what is yours?
Yeah.
What would you like to be on?
See, I would love to have this, like, you know, like Gladiator. You know, that killer song at the end. Oh, my God. Is it Now We Are Free? I always want to have a song in a film like with James Bond, you know? Even though I don't watch James Bond films, but I know all the songs. Something like that. Yeah, I'd love to do that. Yeah, like I always think that Crowded Spaces, I'll send you the song after. That song would be perfect in a film. Absolutely perfect. It's a piano track. It's soulful. Oh, yeah. It's still my favourite song of mine.
Yeah.
But that'd be great in a movie, yeah. Or a game. What kind of music? I'm trying to think one of my dance tracks. I've got a funk track called Move Your Body. That'd be good in like a, you know, good game.
Borderlands or Minecraft?
Yeah, Minecraft. Minecraft. It's things like that, you know. My little nephew. Fortnite. My little nephew's like obsessed with it. I don't know these games. I'm still stuck in the era of PlayStation 1, with Spider-Man. You know, Crash Bandicoot. That's our era.
Good old Crash Bandicoot. See what your music with Crash Bandicoot would be great when he's jumping.
Oh man. Yeah, it'd be great. That's giving me an idea, like, you know.
Okay, so we're coming to the near the end of the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. So if you could just do me a favor, can you just tell people how they can find you, where you can they can find your music, and etc. etc.
Yeah. So you can find my music on any streaming platform: Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Deezer, all the other stuff. I don't even know the other stuff. I know the main stuff. I know the main stuff, but all the other stuff. I mean, or you can go to my website, you know, www.johncannum.com. You know, buy it there, and the money comes to me then. You know. Don't give it the stream site. Give it me. Or look at my Facebook page where all the gigs are. Come to the gigs and give me your money, like Bob Geldof said.
Quick one before you disappear. The streaming sites. Can you see how many people like listen to your tunes and stuff on Spotify? If I type your name in, can I see how many people's downloaded your song? And...
I don't know. I'll be honest, I never looked. I don't like my stuff on Spotify because you know it's all it's robotic. Like, I used to pay for playlists. They were fake. Like nobody actually listened to them. It's just fake plays. I'm thinking, what's the point in that? I'm literally putting money down the toilet. And you know, like I said, Spotify is great if you're a star and you got a big backing from a label. It's great then because they're financing everything. But if you put yourself in my position, I can't do that. That's why I'm always miles behind. You know, but that's what we're striving towards. Hopefully, you know. Yeah. Hopefully, this podcast will help. You know, any young artists I want to collaborate on anything. You know, bring it on. You know, come to the studio anytime you want, you know, absolutely free. Yeah. I don't charge anybody to use my studio. Just come around, man. We jam.
Ryan, so how I like to end every podcast, we're both going to say our favourite word, swear word, at the top of three, and that's how we're going to end this, all right? So, 3, 2, 1.
Cunt.
Perfect. I was the first person to say it with me. Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, bro.
I hope to see your music journey carry on.
To a town where angels fly, a town where the wall is blue, violet fills the rainless clouds, butterflies fly away brighter than a summer's daylight. Oh, 'cause I have died. Time, oh, I'll be together. And- cringe. You're the perfect girl for me. Oh, oh. I think about it every day. It's on my mind constantly. For I let what I see in your eyes.